They retired to the one-hit wonder's wardroom, where they used the holojector in what was technically a game table to examine a detailed set of schematics Tali happened to have of the vessel where she'd grown up. The Raya was a warship, one of the survivors of the original fleet to leave Rannoch in the late 19th century, half a mile or so long, with heavy shielding, thick armor plate, and bristling weapons emplacements. In her current configuration, as part of the backbone of the defense fleet, she crewed more than 1,000, including the various civilian dependents of her military crew.
"It won't be a matter of just cruising up and opening one of the airlocks," Tali said. "In a Phase 3 lockdown, they'll all be sealed with their external controls disabled, just as if the ship were under combat alert. We could blast our way in if we had a boarding charge, but..."
"I don't have a lot of experience in these matters," Utina said dryly, "but I'm going to guess that would attract a lot of attention."
"Probably, being an attack on the ship and all. What we need is to find a way to get someone aboard who can open one of the airlocks from inside."
"But how do you get somebody aboard a starship to open an airlock without opening an airlock?" Utina mused.
"Exactly."
Corwin gazed thoughtfully at the translucent wireframe of the ship's internal structure for a moment, then suddenly paged to the rear of the ship and traced a line along what appeared, to Utina's semi-trained eye, to be some kind of service shaft. He rotated the image, then zoomed in, removing some of the outer structures so that he could get a clear view of the system he was looking at. Then he turned to Tali and said,
"I have an idea."
1426 GST, Lower Engineering Deck, QNV Raya. Corwin was pleased with himself for only getting lost once, while he made his way from the maintenance pit under number one engine to the aftmost ventral airlock, though he knew he would have to do better on the way back up. Flexing his gloved fingers, he applied himself to the task of cracking into the unfamiliar security of the computer-controlled airlock. If all had gone according to plan so far, and the clicks in his headset before indicated that it had, the one-hit wonder was secured to the outer docking pylon of this airlock, hidden from the Raya's passive sensors by her internal emission sink stealth system. From the airlock's external comm port, Tali had been able to compromise the maintenance systems and trip the thruster test that had allowed him access, but she couldn't reach the security system from there. That was only possible from within.
"When you override the airlock," she warned him during the intense little planning session the three of them had held during the flight to the far end of the formation, "it will probably set off an alarm. It will certainly turn on a light on someone's control board somewhere, since it's a hull opening. Either way, we'll have to assume we've been detected and move fast."
Corwin finished compromising the terminal, paused for a moment to collect his thoughts, and then triggered the outer door. It took 30 seconds for Tali and Utina to cycle through and join him in the inner corridor.
"Okay, clock's running," Corwin said. "Worst-case scenario, we've got 360 seconds before a security response reaches this point."
Tali powered up her Omnitool's holo-emitter and displayed the schematic of the ship again, giving the others a chance to review their routes one more time. Then, when both humans indicated they were ready, she shut it down and stood a moment in thought.
"Corwin, Utina," she said hesitantly, "whatever happens in the next 5 minutes, thank you for helping me try."
Corwin smiled a little sadly. "Welcome," he said, then touched her shoulder briefly. Utina just nodded, at a loss for words. Besides, if she teared up in this helmet, it would be a serious pain. She wondered idly how Quarians dealt with that. Could they cry, physiologically speaking? It had sure sounded like Tali was earlier. Then, without another word, they split up and went their separate ways. Corwin's job was simultaneously the simplest and potentially the hardest. He had to go up one level,
move forward along a service corridor 113 yards, and hold that location until further notice. The location in question was a choke point in the access routes to that section of the ship, where the main turboshaft ended and the secondary ducts began. Any security response to the alarm Zutina and Tali were going to be setting off, and the one they might already have tripped, would have to come through here, and it was Corwin's job to see that they didn't. Preferably without seriously harming anyone, which would be tricky, since they would almost certainly try to seriously harm him if it came to it. Quarian security officers were not known for a sense of moderation when their ship's environmental plants were under threat of intrusion. He reached his station, made sure he had sightlines on every possible line of approach, summoned Stick again, and waited. Utina climbed as fast as she could up an emergency ladder, feeling sweat trickle down her back inside her spacesuit, and silently thanking Corwin for insisting that she get used to maneuvering in the one-hit wonder's machinery spaces, which were much tighter than these, in the suit as part of her training. Without that practice and the familiarity with the suit's weight and bulk it had given her, she would have found this challenge even more difficult, not that it was a day at the beach regardless. She concentrated on keeping her breathing deep and regular, which would help her suit's housekeeping systems keep her helmet from fogging up as her body's thermal output elevated within it. The AC unit in the equipment pack on her back kicked up another notch with a noticeable vibration as she passed the third level and made for the fourth. She couldn't read the Quarian markings on the inside of this service ladderway, their equivalent of a Jeffries tube, so she was keeping careful count as she climbed. She needed the seventh level from the bottom, which would be the 12th from the top, deep in the heart of the ship. The radio silence was the hardest part. She wondered whether the ship's security forces had found Corwin yet, then put it out of her mind. He could take care of himself. She'd seen that during Caitlin's mastery trial. Tali was the only one of the three who could accomplish the task she'd set for herself. Utina wouldn't have known what to do with the ship's master computer core once she reached it, and Corwin, with his broad shoulders and bulkier suit, would never have made it through the emergency access tunnel she used to breach its outer security. As it was, she nearly didn't get through it either. She'd grown a bit since the last time she'd sneaked down here. Emerging from the tunnel, which was actually little more than an air duct with some secondary conduits in it, she caught her sleeve on a fitting and nearly tore one of her upper arm pockets off. With an irritated growl, she reflexively slapped a patch over the tear. She didn't think it had actually breached her suit's integrity, but it didn't pay to fool around with such things, particularly with a serious pathogen at large aboard the ship. It occurred to her, as she went to the main console and interfaced her Omni-tool to it, that she was probably being exposed to the virus right now. Her suit's atmospheric filters were no more sophisticated than anyone else's on the Raya. She hadn't mentioned the risk to Corwin or Utina, though they were surely smart enough to realize it if they thought about it for a moment. It didn't matter. Either they would succeed in their mission, or she was probably better off dead anyway. Through the eyes of the Raya's surveillance system, which she now blinded as far as the master security operators up on the bridge were concerned, she saw Corwin at his post, and Utina struggling up the ladder toward hers. The latter was about 5 minutes behind schedule, but harassing her wouldn't help, so Tali maintained calm silence. Hauling that heavy work-rated EVA suit up that ladder was more than Tali would have liked to attempt herself, and she was a much more experienced spacer than the human. Leaving those two camera views in side windows, Tali tuned them out and turned all her attention to compromising the Raya's master control program. "This would be a lot simpler if I had a proper interface module," she thought. "It's a pity Academy students aren't allowed to have them. Not that that stops some of my classmates. Who would have thought that being an honest citizen would be a hindrance?" Utina reached the level she wanted, paused for a moment to catch her breath, and then swung herself from the ladder to the grab handles alongside the hatch for Deck 12. The status light on the control board for the hatch was green. She pressed the activator, and the hatch smoothly, silently opened, admitting her to another featureless gray hallway. Every nerve fizzing, she made her way along it. She had no difficulty finding her way. There was only one way to go here. Forward to a single hatch about a dozen yards away. This too showed a green light as she approached. Without hesitation, she pressed the button. This hatch opened to reveal a surprisingly large room with curved walls blending seamlessly into the ceiling. A half-cylinder, about 20 feet in diameter, turned on its side. 10 yards or so in front of her was a massive blast door. As Zutana watched, it silently opened, four flat panels sliding away from each other to form a diamond-shaped iris. About the same distance beyond it was another, then another, and so on, all opening smoothly in sequence until she could see, 100 yards or so away, her goal, the Raya's Master Atmosphere Processor Manifold. The blast doors finished opening, and just as Zutrina was about to start walking down the corridor, they began closing again. "Sprock," Talizora spat, attempting an override. Someone with command admin privileges, very possibly her own father, had entered the network and was countermanding her instructions to Atmospheric Integrity Control and trying to trace back her own intrusion route. Fending both efforts off at the same time was extremely tricky, doubly so because whoever was over there, and the more she clashed with him, the more convinced she became that it was her father, was extremely good at the game. Knowing she had to buy Utrina all the time she could, Tali fell back to Plan B and flooded the system with junk, slowing it to a crawl. Her commands to the doors and her opponents were both still getting through, but not very efficiently. And though her opponent maintained the upper hand, the net effect was that the doors were now closing very slowly. Slowly enough, Tali hoped, for Utrina to make it through. If Tali didn't think of something else once she was in there, she might be trapped. But if she could reach the manifold, they could worry about that later. Corwin's helmet cron gave the mission elapsed time as 0 hours, 3 minutes, 23 seconds, when the first group of armored security officers reached his position, emerging from the turbo car and drawing up in surprise at the sight of him there. "Halt!" one of them cried, drawing a shock baton from a mag mount on his hip and energizing it. Down here, this close to the entrails of the ship, with all their pipes full of various dangerous substances, there could be no power guns, one thing in Corwin's favor. "This area is restricted. Identify yourself." "Ravenhair's the name," Corwin replied. "Believe it or not, I'm a friend. I'm with a group that's trying to solve your atmospheric contaminant problem." "What the? He's human," another of the officers blurted in shock. "You think he's behind the fever?" a third asked her fellows. "Uh-oh," Corwin thought. "I do not like the sound of their voices." "Easy there," he said, trying to sound as calm as possible. "I'm not your enemy. I just said I'm trying to fix this. It sounds to me like you guys may not be feeling too well yourselves, so what do you say we all just take it easy here and wait for my team to make the problem go away?" He couldn't technically have sworn he heard one of them say, "Get him!" as they charged, but it wouldn't have been in any way a surprise. When Utrina saw the doors start to close, she didn't stop to consider the whys and wherefores, because that was not the kind of person she was. She was the kind of person who, seeing circumstances that might cut her off from accomplishing what she had set out to do, doubled her efforts. In this case, that meant, essentially, running the 100-yard hurdles in a spacesuit. It helped that the gravity in here felt like it was a little below standard, similar to the gravity on Gerardo, come to think of it. But it was still not exactly how she would have liked to spend the afternoon, particularly as the hurdles kept slowly getting higher as she went. By the sixth, she had abandoned proper hurdling technique and was instead vaulting them, putting a hand on the flat surfaces to help her over. At the penultimate door, she nearly struck her helmet against the upper panels, so small had the central opening become. So for the last one, she just put on all the speed she could muster and dove for it, entertaining a fleeting vision of the doors closing on her feet as she passed through the shrinking iris. Then she was hitting the deck, rolling, and coming to her feet, the last obstacle passed. She felt the vibration through the soles of her boots as the final blast door closed solidly behind her. That might complicate things. Still, at least she was here now. Utrina opened the flap pocket on her right thigh and removed the silver cylinder Tali had given her, studying the huge bank of unknown machinery before her as she did. Somewhere on here there would be a fitting that would accept this device. She hadn't had a lot of time to memorize the hollow of the panel Tali had shown her, but she remembered it was in the upper right... there. Utrina thumbed the switch on the top of the cylinder, causing a sharp point to spring out of the other end as if the device were an enormous hypodermic. Then she stepped up to the panel, stretched up on her tiptoes, and shoved the point into the fitting. It slid smoothly in until the face of the cylinder itself clicked into the outer ring of the fitting. A pair of curved metallic arms popped out of the panel, closed over the protruding end, and drew the entire device inside. Still locked in her battle with the security controller, Tali saw the status indicator for the atmosphere processor begin flashing, indicating that Morden's delivery module was loaded. Abandoning the struggle for control of the doors, she instead isolated atmosphere control entirely, unlocked the board, and commanded an emergency system flush. Nothing happened. Tali slammed a fist down on the console, realizing that her opposite number at the other end of the link had sussed her last move in time to interdict it. That meant it couldn't be her father. Surely even he wouldn't be so stubborn as to refuse to let the cure be distributed now that it was actually in the system, but someone else, not fully aware of the situation. Utrina wasn't entirely sure what the story was with this equipment, but she was reasonably certain it wasn't supposed to just do nothing once the vial was on board. Wishing, not for the first time today, that she could read Quarian, she scanned the panel with her eyes, looking for any clue she might have missed a step. "Just plug the cartridge in, and I'll take care of the rest," Tali had said. But for all Utrina knew, she'd run into some kind of problem down below, at which point... what? She spied an amber light flashing up near the top of the massive control board, above the plate that now covered the fitting where she had inserted the canister. Next to it was a large mechanical lever set into a vertical slot nearly 3 feet long, its handle protruding from the top at a slight upward angle. It was painted in a pattern of alternating black and orange stripes that, to Utrina's eye, screamed, "In case of emergency, pull this." Hoping she wasn't about to commit some hideous act of cultural misinterpretation that would see her vent the starship's atmosphere to space or something similarly catastrophic, but not seeing a lot of options, Utrina gathered herself, jumped into the air, and just missed the handle. Her second try came closer, but it slipped out of her grip. Still a bit winded from the run through the blast doors, she reached deep inside herself, looking for those reserves that had seen her through the toughest duels back in the old country. Dropped into a crouch, and hurled herself upward with all the strength she could muster, her left arm at full extension above her. Her gloved hand closed on the handle just as she reached the top of her leap. She seized it as hard as she could and let her body weight help her pull it down. The lever moved only grudgingly, clearly not having been used in a long time, if ever. For a second or two she hung there, her boot soles completely off the floor. Pulling so fiercely, she would have been chinning herself on the lever if she hadn't been wearing this heavy suit. Something inside the panel gave way with a grinding sound, and the lever swung down and locked into its lower position, depositing Utrina back on the deck as it did so. Once more, for a second, nothing happened. And then the hull of the Raya filled with the deep, reverberating roar of the ventilation system going into maximum overdrive, blasting the contents of Morden's vial into every nook and cranny and corner of the vessel. The presence at the other end of the link to Tali's control console seemed to hesitate as the sound of salvation echoed through the ship. Then, a moment later, he logged off. Tali wasted no time in taking control of the doors again and signaling her confederates to withdraw. Unspeakably relieved to see the blast doors open again, Utrina got the hell out of Dodge. Her fatigue and the weight of the suit were forgotten as she sprinted back to the ladderway, put her hands and feet on the outside of the ladder, and let herself slide all the way down without touching any of the rungs. She and Tully met up just outside the main maintenance trunk, where they'd parted from Corwin a few minutes before. A moment later he appeared, sporting a couple of interesting scorch marks on his spacesuit, but apparently unharmed. "There's another group on the way down," he reported, out of breath, as the three of them beat it back toward the airlock. "And they are mad." "What happened to the first group?" Tully asked. "The first and second groups," Corwin replied, "are having a little nap. Don't worry, I didn't compromise anybody's suit. A few of their ribs, possibly, but..." She nodded and lapsed into a thoughtful silence as they ran, reaching the airlock in moments. Corwin went to the control panel and activated the inner door. "Come on," he said. "That third group was right behind me. I could hear them getting off the lift." Tally stood in silent thought for a moment, then said, "Go. I'll stay here." "Stay here? Are you crazy?" Utrina demanded. "We just flouted every security policy in the fleet. They'll crucify you if the guards don't just beat you to death when they catch you." "If I run now, I'll have to leave the Union altogether," Tully replied. "I'll be an exile." Utrina looked for a moment like she might try to persuade her that exile didn't strike her as so bad compared to the alternative, but she kept silent. Something in the young Quarian's tone told her that it would be useless to argue. "She sounds like me," Utrina realized with a wry internal smile, "when I get my head down. If I stay and face the music, Morden will speak for me, and my grandparents, who aren't without influence," Tally went on. "At worst, I may spend some time in the brig, and I can't abandon my people now. But you two," she went on, "have to get out of here. Fast." She glanced over her shoulder at the corridor they'd come from. They could all hear the clatter of the security troops approaching. "Go," she insisted. "Thank you so much for your help. I owe you more than I can ever repay, but that won't stop me from trying. Someday, I'll see you both again." Corwin gave her a hug, touched his helmet to hers, and said privately, "You're welcome, Talizora. I wish it could have been more." "It was enough," she replied. "It was good to see you again, even considering. Tayur, Corwin." "Live with courage, dear one," he told her in Norse, then disengaged and stepped into the airlock, beckoning for Utrina to follow. Utrina gave Tally a long look, then followed him. Tally went to the panel, sealed the inner door, and set the lock to auto-cycle, then shut off the panel and turned to face the hallway. When the guards arrived a moment later, she raised her hands and let it be known that she would go without a fight. The last Corwin and Utrina saw of her, through the inner airlock window before they closed the outer door and disengaged the One-Hit Wonder's docking clamps, was a pair of them taking her into custody. "Come on," Corwin repeated, pulling off his helmet and abandoning it by the Wonder's inner hatch. "We're not out of this yet." They ran to the cockpit, cramming into their seats despite the bulky suits. Both stripped off their gloves and started pre-flighting with all the speed they could muster, bringing the ship up from standby to full power in moments. Sensor alarms immediately started sounding, informing them that Quarian interceptors with powerful search radars were out there, probing the darkness for them. The Quarians knew the intruders aboard the Raya must have come from a docked spacecraft, and they had a pretty good general idea where that spacecraft must be, given where it must have been docked. And if the Wonder's IES kept her from showing up on their passive sensors, well, it was only a matter of time before one of these active scans nailed them. That black low-vis hull coating helped a bit against active sensors, but it was no replacement for an active cloak, which they didn't have. What they did have was speed, and it was this Corwin now banked on as he turned the Wonder on her heel and headed out of the formation at full power. Utrina didn't even bother turning on her comm panel. Nobody out there was saying anything she was interested in hearing. Instead, she applied her attention to the astrogation computer, putting all her recent training to its first real stress test as she sought out the hyperspace vector that would get him out of the Scandia system fastest. "Will they chase us once we're out of their territory?" she wondered. "Doubt it," Corwin replied. "If they do, we can lose them." Another alarm sounded, this one more strident. "There's our first active paint. 3 or 4 more of those and we might start seeing missiles next." "Outbound vector computed and locked," Utrin reported after 2 more sensor alerts. 20 seconds to optimum jump point." Corwin said nothing, just made a low murmuring sound that might have been a prayer, or might just have been the sort of entreaty a man who tended to personify machinery might make to his car. Actually, with Corwin, those 2 things were pretty much the same. 10 seconds to jump," Utrin reported. Another paint alarm, then another, and then a whole new sound, the hair-raising double whoop of the incoming fire siren. "Guess there's no point leaving this on," Corwin muttered, switching off the IES. The cabin temperature almost immediately dropped as the Wonder started venting excess heat to space again. With a twist of another knob, he powered up the deflector array, just in time as a moment later the ship jerked with the solid impact of a warhead, probably a light air-to-air missile. The siren howled twice more. Some detached part of Utrinim was very pleased with herself as she counted calmly down the last few seconds. 3, 2, 1. Light speed! At the call, Corwin squeezed the one-hit wonder's grouped throttles together and pushed them all the way to the final stop. The sky blurred, the stars stretched, and they were away. "We're clear. Negative pursuit. My scope is clear." Corwin looked over at his co-pilot and smiled tiredly. "Looks like we got away with it." Utrin sat back in her seat and let out a long breath. "Until we get wherever we're going next and the cops are waiting for us," she said resignedly. "Still, it was worth it." "There won't be any cops," Corwin said. "Tali's father is a real jerk, but he's not the vengeful type. It's over now. He's just going to want to put the whole thing behind him. And besides," he added soberly, "he's got other things on his mind." Utrinna frowned. "Yeah, I suppose you have a point there." She shook her head. "Hell of a day." "Yeah. Be a long time before I hear 'Welcome to the Quarian Union' again." "What'll happen to Tali?" Utrinna wondered. "She'll end on her feet," Corwin said positively. "She always does." He smiled fondly. "All Quarians are tough, and most of them are stubborn, and then there's Tali's aura." "She seemed like a good kid," Utrinna agreed. "I wish we'd had more time, so I could have gotten to know her better." Corwin smiled. "You'll have other chances," he said. "We haven't seen the last of that girl, not by a long, long way. See, when Quarians finish school, they have this tradition they call the pilgrimage." "1733 GST, Detention Center, QNV Raya." Tali Zora was lying on the bunk in her cell, listening to the Electric Light Orchestra cover of Edvard Grieg's Piano Concerto in A Minor on her Omnitool and thinking, when the force field sealing her cell suddenly winked out and Vedic Zora entered the room. "Grandfather," Tali said, getting to her feet.
"Tali Zora," Vedic replied, hugging his granddaughter. "I'm glad to see you're safe. I'm so sorry about Zira."
"Thank you, Grandfather," said Tali in a subdued voice. "They tell me that at least she suffered little. The fever took her quickly."
She sniffled, then mastered herself and asked,
"But why are you here?"
"I came to take you away from this place," Vedic replied.
"Your grandmother is up on the bridge having words with Rail. We decided that was the best division of labor.
the old soldier added with a faint wryness. Captain Sarna agrees that you should spend a few days on the Archangel with us before returning to your studies. Tally looked around the cell in puzzlement. Am I not charged with mutiny, then? No, of course not, said Vedic, leading her out of the cell. The two security officers on duty in the outer brig office came to attention as he entered. They weren't under his command, but it was a rare member of the Quarian Marine Corps who didn't salute Colonel Vedic Zora Vas Archangel. Your father said some things to you that you'll find hard to forgive, Vedic said quietly, as he and Tally navigated the corridors toward the main hangar deck. I've seen the records of your arrest. Whether you do forgive him is your own business, but I hope you do. Remember, he suffered a terrible loss today as well. He may be a pig-headed, inflexible martinet, but he's still your father. Tally made a sound that might have been a chuckle or might have been a snort, then answered honestly, I don't know whether I can do that, Grandfather, and if I do, it won't be right away. She looked pensively around at the hallway they were walking through. It'll be a long time before I ever come back to this ship again. That's understandable, Vedic told her. Then he put his arm around her shoulders, gave her a squeeze, and said, In the meantime, regardless of what your father may have said in the heat of the moment, know this, Tally Zora. You and your friends did a great thing today. You saved hundreds of lives. Your grandmother and I are very, very proud of you. Tally tried her best not to let on how hollow a victory she felt that was under the circumstances, as she thanked her grandfather. Most likely she did not succeed, but he said nothing about it. 1911 GST, Zelfina Station. Corwin and Utina were in the unnamed diner on Zelfina Station's whimsically named Promenade Deck, treating themselves to some surprisingly good pie after a hard day on the space lanes, when Corwin's wrist computer emitted the three musical tones that meant he had mail. He checked it, smiled, and switched up the projection field so that Utina could read it too. From Tally Zora Naraya, Tally.Zora, Archangel.Navy.QU. Subject, all clear. To Corwin Ravenhair, Corwin, OHW.RavenhairLabs.ZC. Date, Tuesday, July 28th, 2405, 1911-48-0 GST. Dear Corwin, my grandparents and Morden have intervened with Father and the rest of the Admiralty, as has Captain Cardana of the Raya, who is apparently less enamored of the migrant-era quarantine protocol. As a result, Father's charges against me of mutiny and unauthorized tampering with the ship's systems have been dropped. I still have a charge of insubordination against my name, but under the circumstances I can't really bring myself to care. You two are in the clear. The security officers Corwin tangled with all acknowledge that they were not entirely rational at the time of the incident. In fact, a couple of them asked me to pass on their thanks for not being any rougher with them than you had to be. Apart from that, there's no evidence that either of you was ever there, and the vessel that was fired upon by perimeter patrol is officially unidentified. All the same, perhaps it would be best if you didn't return to the Scandia system right away. As I told you before we parted, I owe the two of you more than I may ever be able to repay. Thank you so much. I could not have made what happened today happen all on my own. Yours, Tally. Utina smiled a little sadly. She doesn't owe me anything, she said. I was happy to help. It's not like we could just let all those people die when we had the means to save them. Corwin nodded. I'll try and explain that to her sometime when it's all less raw. For now, it's probably best to just give her time.
Utrinna sighed. Yeah. So what's next for us, then?
We're headed back to Tomodachi. Time to do some warp drive work. Dad's lined us up one of the IPO's runabouts. We're going to ferry it to Zeta C for him, then Stargate back to Nakomikoka.
Corwin grinned.
Should be a milk run. This concludes Undocumented Features Future Imperfect, Symphony of the Sword No. 2, Sonata No. 1, Quarantena. The symphony will return.